everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. It is May 21st, 2013, and you are listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. And it is such a beautiful, beautiful day today in New York City. It's like summer already. And that's nice. I went for a great run today, and it just felt really good to breathe. I'm really into breathing these days. I've been noticing I've been talking about breathing a lot lately. It's a very simple pleasure. And although I know it's all about food in my world, we really can't really get anywhere without breathing. So it's nice when the air smells delicious. I like to appreciate the different kinds of air. Sometimes the air isn't too good, but when it is good, it's something to celebrate. No, I am not going to try and be a breatharian. That's not where I'm going with this. But breathing, just appreciate your breathing and take long, low, deep breaths. It's good for you. All right, my first guest, my only guest actually today, Paul Graham, was born, raised, and lived most of his life in the San Jose area of Northern California. While in the San Jose area, he worked with teens and professional athletes and was the chaplain of the Oakland A's baseball team. He moved to Las Vegas, Nevada in 2004, where he is a writer, green realtor, and top wedding officiant. He has been a vegan since 2007 and began the Eating Vegan in Vegas blog in 2011. Paul writes a weekly Sunday column, Being Vegan, for the Las Vegas Informer, an online newspaper which carries his column in its sister publications in California and Texas. Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
I am doing great, and it's a beautiful day here in the desert as well.
Look at that. It's a beautiful day. So I'm going to take another beautiful breath in. Exhale. And first, I'm glad to be talking to you. It's kind of a interesting, funny way how we, quote, met, because we haven't met in person, but it was through these small world coincidences, through a friend of my partner, his sister, Linda Lawrence Bryan, who knows you.
Yes.
Thought we should know each other.
Yes, sounds great. And that's serendipitous, I believe, for us to be able to meet and talk today.
Yeah, well, we've been talking a lot about getting to Las Vegas, so when we do, we'll definitely look you up, and you're definitely the source of where to go when it comes to food for vegans.
Well, we've been doing a lot of eating here these past few years. Of course, Las Vegas is a great food city anyway, but it's really been going through a wonderful transformation over the past few years as it has really opened its doors to the whole world of plant-based eating and has really become a leader in the sense of traditional restaurants who've opened up their menus to add, you know, plant-based eating for the millions of visitors. We have over 3 million visitors that come here every month, as well as the almost 2 million people who live here right now in the Las Vegas Valley.
Well, I find it fascinating that many of the go-to chefs today are actually acknowledging that some of the more exciting ingredients today on the plate to play with are plant foods.
Right. Well, you know, you think if you've done any sort of cooking before, of course, I've been cooking all my life, it seems, but, you know, most meals are based around a piece of meat or a piece of fish or something like that, and then everything else is kind of a, you know, to adorn the remaining amount of plate. Become almost side dishes, and yet with what you have now with plant-based, you really ask the chef now to create a meal out of, first of all, some wonderful ingredients to be able to create something that's not only satisfying, but looks beautiful, and I think that's, it's just amazing to see the creativity that, that some of the chefs are able to come up with now. It's really, really, some of the dishes here are just fantastic.
Okay, let's talk about you for a little bit. And it was fun reading in the beginning of your book. A lot of us who become vegan for one reason or another feel this lack of not having a compelling story, because some of the mentors or some of the authors that we've read about have these great stories, and they end up writing a book, and their story is something that's so convincing that it compels other people to want to adopt this diet. And, you know, some of us just don't have a story. Well, I thought I didn't have a story for a long time. I've been vegan for 25 years and vegetarian before that, and I often said, you know, I just do it for all these reasons, which I feel are the right reasons. And then I did get a story, but I don't want to get into my story right now. Maybe a little later. But you have a story that I think would relate, many people would relate to.
Well, you know, I lived most of my life in Northern California and surrounded by foodies, and I have chefs in my family, and I've done a lot of cooking myself. And I could tell people for most of my life I really ate and cooked almost anything that I wanted. I've always had a great appreciation for food and the celebration of food and, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just the ability to be able to, you know, enjoy, you know, food in that way. And so I'm come to a place, you know, after I moved out here to Las Vegas, that I was really looking for ways to optimize my own health. And so for me, it was really a health journey. I was in pretty good shape, but I was really looking for ways to optimize my health and to be able to get to that, you know, next level and hopefully enjoy and be able to breathe for the next 50 years or so. And as I did my research, I really looked into it and said that most of the things that debilitate us and the diseases and the things that really impact our health seem to be food related. And in looking at that further, I thought, well, you know, if we can control by our diet, you know, that's a good place to start. And then as I looked at it even further, you know, I found that, you know, it really the two of the big culprits there were meat and dairy, and they were contributing to a lot of health issues and things like that. So if we could eliminate those things, and so I began to look at that, and I got in a place in my life anywhere where I had eliminated a lot of the meat and the dairy from my life anyway. I was down to a little bit of chicken, a little bit of fish, and so for me it was very easy to transition to you know, becoming a vegetarian. And it was right about that time though that someone gave me a book, and it was a book, Skinny Bitch, by Rory Friedman and Kim, her last name now that wrote that, it was very impactful for me because it opened it up a little bit more that beyond just the health issues, it was also the issues of animal rights and what was happening with animals, which I really had really no idea to the extent of what was happening and even that whole process. As much as I was working and doing things with food, I just didn't understand what was really happening there in terms of, you know, the animals there and the sheer numbers of animals that were, you know, being slaughtered every year for food consumption, not only here in the United States but worldwide, and also the environmental impacts as well. So for me, it really grew from there, and it was just the logical thing to do to move towards becoming vegan and eliminating animal products, not only for my food but for my lifestyle.
Well, I give you a lot of credit, one, for being open to reading a book called Skinny Bitch.
Yeah. Well, I know. I laughed at that when they first gave it to me, and I subsequently read The Skinny Bastard after that, which was great as well. But I just had a chance actually last week when I was in Los Angeles to go to a book event that Roy Friedman was having for her new book, Beg, and I was able to get a chance to meet her. And it was great to be able to just sit down with her and talk to her and, you know, tell her about, you know, that everything that I'm doing now in my life is really as a result of the effort and the work that she had done. And things like that, the rippling effects sometimes of the work and things that we do. So
yeah, so let's just pause here a moment and just put that out there to everyone, knowing that what you do as an individual makes a difference. Never think that it doesn't. It's that whole drop in the bucket concept. We all fill the bucket one drop at a time, and it does matter what you do. So if you're ever thinking, gosh, this sounds too difficult, or I want to, but it matters, talk about it. Do something about it. It matters. It makes a difference. And only change happens starting from each one of us. So there's my little preaching for the moment. And well, people need to be reminded.
No, they do.
They matter. We all matter. We all make a difference.
We all do.
Yeah. And now, you know, you started your blog project that turned into a book, and I'm sure the rippling effect continues.
It does, because the day doesn't go by when I don't get contact and with people from literally around the world who have said you visited Las Vegas, we're thinking about doing it, and we came up, we found your blog, and it led us to this and led us to that, and it's really what I wanted to do, was be able to build a bridge. You know, it was in the spring of 2011, and I was thinking about, well, what could I do to be able to build a bridge to people? You know, we all have to eating is a practical part of our lives, and as much as I felt strongly about everything else, is that as an initial bridge, if I could show people how we could, you know, eat not only at home wonderfully, but also out, I'd say even in a city here like Las Vegas, which has never been known for its plant-based cuisine, we could do it. So I decided to do a blog, and I was going to go out, and I just said in my mind I was going to go out for 365 days and eat a different plant-based meal each day out, and I was going to blog about it, and so I did, and then it became a year-long thing, and I still have the blog. I don't go out every day, but it's just, you know, two or three times a week. But it turned into an opportunity then to be able to kind of take it to the next level, and I was contacted by Sullivan Street Press there in New York City, and to be able to do an ebook and kind of talk a little bit about my story. And so the ebook itself contains over 150 different restaurants here in Las Vegas that I ate at, and I talk about and break it down by area. So it becomes a really handy guidebook for, you know, people to be able to have. It's an easy download. They can just go to the Sullivan Street Press website and download it very easily, and they can download it to their phone or their tablet or their laptop or whatever. But the idea is for it to be mobile, something that they could take with them. So whether they live here in Las Vegas or they're visiting the city. But beyond that, I also talk about in each chapter, I talk about the whys of why we are vegan, and one of the chapters I talk about the health reasons, and then I talk about the ethical and social justice issues, and another one I talk about the environmental reasons, and then beyond that, then I talk about the spiritual reasons as well. So I wanted to do something that not only just talked about the where to go eat, but more importantly, the whys.
Well, the whys certainly are very important, and those issues that you brought up, health, environment, animal, spiritual, it's somewhat a circle. We kind of jump into the circle at one point and then learn about all of the other issues, and they all reinforce each other. I was reading something recently, I don't want to mention any names, but there was a long-term vegan who decided not to be vegan because of cravings, and someone else explained that this person didn't become vegan because of the ethical reasons. This person became vegan for health reasons, and that was one of the reasons why it wasn't long-lasting. And, you know, I don't know if that's true or not. We're all very different. We all have all different kinds of stuff going on in our head. But I think, you know, once we're open to the concept that we don't require killing to survive, that opens a door to so many other things. And, you know, I would like to think that it sticks for the most part once we get the ethical portion of it. But they're all important. All the issues are important. And it's a win-win. There's no bad reason to do this.
No. And they're all bridges. And I think in time, they all kind of morph together, because I think if you're in this, what I call the lifestyle, conscious living and eating, and you're in there for a while, they all kind of morph together. They all become, I think, very central in your mind, and it's hard to separate them, I think, after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think, as I tell people, I say they're all bridges, and I think one of the big bridges today is going to be for health reasons, for able to bring people over. But then after that, I said it's really the ethical and the social justice issues once you really are open. And I think you're in a much better place and frame of mind, I think, to entertain it. Once you've kind of walked away from the things and you're maybe even into it for the health reasons and you've stopped, you know, consuming animal products, you can begin to really look at things in a different way. I think you're just, by human nature, your mind is a little bit more open to, you know, discovering some of these things. And you can't help but sit down and watch a movie like Earthlings and not be, you know, in a sense, branded to the very core of who you are. And as I tell people, I say, you know, maybe you came over for environmental or spiritual or health reasons, but it's really it's those ethical, the social justice reasons that become the real steel and the cement of that bridge that, you know, that will forever be there for you. And that's going to be the thing that I think is going to cement you into this lifestyle, because you realize that it's so much more beyond your own health. It, you know, that there's 60 billion animals a year.
There's a... You mention a number of different people in your book. Steve Wynn, of course, gets mentioned. He's this major building mogul in Las Vegas and has really changed the footprint there from a food point of view because of all of the restaurants that he owns and has required to offer vegan food at those places. And it sounded like you tried all of them, if not most of them.
Yeah, no, I've been to almost all of them. They all have wonderful, you know, working with the great chefs that are already there, that are part of the, you know, that are part of the Wynn and Encore restaurants already. And they brought in Chef Tal Ronan, who's the top vegan chef, and to consult with all of them, still consults to this day, to create, you know, wonderful menu options beyond, you know, just what they were presently already offering.
I don't like to give so much weight to celebrities, but we can't help ourselves. And when we get a celebrity that supports what we do, it's great. It's exciting. And Steve
yeah.
Wynn is one of those who, you know, we lump his name in with some major people like Bill Clinton. Because
right.
we're so excited that these people who are not only famous but are considered very intelligent and successful and have the means, why they would choose such a lifestyle, and they choose it for the right reasons, you know, we want to use their names and their stories because, and it just says it all.
Right. No, and I think it's something he's obviously he has opened up a door here in, you know, Las Vegas that has made, you know, such a difference in other restaurants now that are had not maybe thought about it before. All of a sudden said, well, you know, Steve Wynn is doing this and he's such a great businessman, and no matter how he might have felt about it personally, he's you know, he has taken the step. And as a great businessman that he is, that I'm sure it's going to be something that we should look at as well. And it's really helped open up the doors to so many traditional restaurants now that have really, you know, become really, I think, just just shining lights here now in the city, because alongside their already wonderful menus, now that they have these other, you know, tremendous plant-based offerings as well.
You had Elizabeth Kucinich do a foreword in your book. Congratulations for that. She is a lovely person and does incredible
yeah.
work. I just wanted to mention her and the fact that she is now the policy chief for food safety at the Center for Food Safety. And we need her in that position.
Yeah.
So how do you know Elizabeth Kucinich?
Actually, it was through my editor, and the editor, Deborah Eamon had set that up, and so they had
nice.
Contact and make things, and she found out about the project and what I was doing and definitely wanted to support it.
Right. I met her at one of the PCRM, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine events. Yeah, really, really amazing individual. And I haven't been to Las Vegas since, did we lose you? Okay. I am going to just talk a little bit about my Las Vegas experience. We seem to have lost Paul for a moment, and I hope we can find him. But I was in Las Vegas two times, in 1980 and 1981, and I know that it has completely changed. And definitely it's called Sin City for lots of different reasons. Gambling, I remember... I used to like actually playing roulette and craps. It was a fun thing, and I came from a numbers background, and I just enjoyed the probability, the odds, the statistics from a mathematical point of view. But the thing that was really annoying about the casinos in particular was all the smoking. And I understand that has changed to some extent 30 years later, and perhaps Paul could let us know about that when he joins us, if we get him back. And the other thing that I remember, which is kind of true of casinos all around the United States at least, is these buffets that bring people in. So the idea in the casino is to keep people gambling. And one way to do that is to keep them liquored up and keep them fed, well fed, and attracted to all kinds of deals on food. So I remember these deals where the food was really inexpensive in many places, and you'd have buffets and all kinds of food. And even for, well, I was vegetarian at that time. I wasn't vegan yet. But there was still plenty of food to eat back then because of these big buffets. But a fascinating thing where they realized that to get people to be, quote, sinful, to gamble, to let go of their money, you have to entice them very often with some other things like food, lots of food, inexpensive food, and alcohol. What does that say about us? Right. Another, I just want to mention this, this has nothing to do with food, but it's just a funny story. I went in one of my trips to Las Vegas, and I was there on two road trips. I actually drove from the East Coast to the West Coast both times and stopped in Las Vegas. And one time, a friend of mine gave me $100, and he wanted me to gamble it in a certain way. He gave me specific instructions, which I did not follow. This was back in 1982. And I actually gambled it on roulette and won him $900. And I took that cash and I put it in a plain envelope and mailed it back to him. And it was an amazing, amazing story. That's my experience with Las Vegas. And we talk a lot about going back there because now of the incredible food scene that's going on today. Have you been to Las Vegas? Do you like Las Vegas? Often when I'm Googling things for vegans, things from Las Vegas come up because I guess the people in Las Vegas are called Las Vegans. Vegans? Las Vegans? I like to say that vegans are from the planet Vega, but maybe they're just from Las Vegas. Silly things to think about. Well, I wanted to mention, I wanted to talk about a number of things with Paul, but he's not with us, so not sure what to do about that, but we'll just continue. He happens to have a blog on Tumblr. It's called eatingveganinvegas.tumblr.com, and what I wanted to talk about was Tumblr, because Tumblr was just purchased by Yahoo for $1.1 billion, not insignificant number, and I guess I'm just not social network savvy enough to know what all the fuss is. I'm personally a WordPress user, not a Tumblr user, for my own websites, and I'm curious about what all the fuss is. Do you have some Tumblr sites that you really enjoy that you want to share with me? If you do, I want to remind you that my email is info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. And for the rest of the show here, if you are listening live, I know many people listen in the archives, I'm going to open it up for calls at 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888. And if any of you are listening live, it would be great to hear from you. If you have any questions about food, for the next portion of the show, I'm going to be talking about a lot of different things, including, just to whet your appetite here, blood pressure, oxalates, bacteria, breast cancer, which is a hot subject, as it continues to be year after year after year after year, and bees. So if any of those things are interesting to you and you have some information to share, you can call in at 1-888-874-4888. There you go. I'm just scanning through the ebook for Paul Graham's book, and I'm looking for, well, just the format of the book, just so you know, is the first half is a discussion of a number of different places that he went to and what he ate and what it was like. And then the second portion of the book is simply a listing of the different restaurants and where they're located, what neighborhood, whether they're vegan or vegan-friendly, the price range, what his favorite dishes were, some comments and contacts. So if you're going to Las Vegas, this might be a useful thing to pick up. All right. Well, I'm not going to count on hearing from Mr. Graham, so why don't we take a little break, and we'll continue with the rest of the show in a few minutes. Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and we're back. It is May 21st, 2013. You're listening to It's All About Food. All right, I wanted to say again, you can reach me at info@realmeals.org during the program or any time during the week. And I can't say enough how much I love to hear from listeners. And I learned so much from you. So please send me a message either now or any time during the week. And also, if you want to have a conversation, the line is open at 1-888-874-4888. Now, most of the time on this program, I bring on guests, doctors, nutritionists, athletes, authors, chefs, activists, people that are passionate like I am about food. And once or twice a year, I like to just babble on my own because I have a few things that I want to say and just get on with it. All right, so there's a whole bunch of things that have been going on that we've been reading about in the press, hearing about in the news, on television, and wherever, and I wanted to talk about some of them. One of them has to do with the bees. Now, we've been hearing quite a bit about the bees probably for the last 7 years or so. We're hearing about the colony collapse disorder. And I don't like to buy into fear tactics. I don't like to buy into sensational media that tells us about gloom and doom and how we have to prepare for the end of the world. However, I also don't like to keep my head in the sand, and there are things that we just cannot ignore. And the bees, it's like the canary in the coal mine. They're telling us things, and we really need to be paying attention. So since 2006, beekeepers have noticed that the bees aren't doing as well as they used to. Some bees flew away from their hives and never returned. And some of them have just died, and they're not thriving. And we use bees quite a lot. They're not just used for making honey. They're used to pollinate crops. And it's estimated that, according to the UN at least, about 70% of the crops that provide 90% of human food are pollinated by bees. Okay, 70% of crops that provide 90% of our food are pollinated by bees. So you could imagine that if the bee population goes down and even has the potential of disappearing, we lose a lot of food. Now, the reason why this is in the news a little more frequently lately is because our EPA recently approved a pesticide called, I never pronounce these correctly, but I'll attempt to, the pesticide sulfoxaflor. And it's a fourth-generation neonicotinoid, and this is considered highly toxic to honeybees. This group of chemicals, these neonicotinoids, they've been discussed in scientific studies now for a number of years, and it's believed that they're highly toxic to honeybees, to the extent that in Europe they're putting a temporary ban on this type of pesticide. They're putting into effect, I believe, at the end of the year, and it's a two-year ban just to see what happens and see what the impact is on the bee population. But our EPA just approved a new type of this particular class of pesticide that's damaging to bees, and you have to wonder, what are they thinking or not thinking? And the scary thing is that they put out a report. They approved this one particular pesticide. They're studying the effects of neonicotinoids, but they're not going to conclude their review on neonicotinoids until 2018 at the earliest. 2018, that's 5 years from now. And that's kind of scary to me. So the question is, what does all of this mean? Pesticides are unhealthy. They're unhealthy for bees, and they're certainly unhealthy for the rest of us. Oh, my goodness, Paul, are you back?
Yeah, I was in our technological world here. I had a definite shortcoming there, so I wasn't sure what was going on. It took me a while to find out what was happening. And
oh, you're back. I thought you were busy at this time.
No, I'm fine. We had to rearrange some things.
Okay, awesome. Welcome back, Paul Graham, to It's All About Food. I don't know if you were listening, but I'm talking about what's going on with the bees, and it's a pretty scary thing, actually. Pesticides.
It is.
These neonicotinoids are used on corn, canola, cotton, sugar beets, soybeans, cereal grains, rice, fruit, and lots of vegetable crops. And it's just amazing. And I, like I said before, it's like the canary in the cave mine, because if it's affecting the bees, you know it's going to affect us, whether we have bees or not. These chemicals are not good for us at all.
One of the reasons why I'm participating in the march against Monsanto, one of the cities here, we're doing a march here in Las Vegas, and we're going to be marching, you know, against that, and you know, because some of the chemicals are obviously used there are coming from companies and products like Roundup and things, which is a big Monsanto product, and it's having a devastating effect on so many different levels, from bees all the way up to humans.
Right, and so there, you know, we always feel kind of helpless that there isn't a lot we can do, especially when our government continues to make the wrong choices. But there are things that we can do, and I just wanted to run by a few of them. Now, we can't all do these things, but if we have a little ground space and we can grow a garden, growing gardens are good. And if you can support a family of bees, if you can support a hive, a bee colony, a lot of urban areas, they're doing that on rooftops now. And I believe as long as the bees are fed properly or allowed to live relatively naturally and feed on things that aren't toxic, they're going to thrive.
Yes.
I have some friends in Tuscany who have a vegan biodynamic winery, and they also grow bees, and their bees are thriving. These bees have wonderful flowers to feed themselves on, and they're doing well. And it's just so frustrating that our government and scientists feel like they have to do further studies.
Right.
Oh, well. I wanted, when you were gone, I was talking about my brief time in Las Vegas back in 1980 and 1981 and 82. I did a couple of road trips and stopped out there, and I know that it has changed tremendously in 30 years. So my memory is hanging around in very smoky casinos. Are the casinos mostly smoke-free now?
Actually, no. The restaurants are. The casinos are the only ones that still have smoking allowed in them. All the restaurants around town do not, and as well as the restaurants within the casino. But walking through the casino, you're going to come across some smoke. But although I must say to their credit, especially the Wynns were really innovators in this whole thing in terms of creating air systems that really pulled the smoke out. I mean, they have some of the best air filtration systems in the world that are present. So they really pull a lot of it out. So it's a much different situation, even the way that it was, you know, 5 to 10 years ago is really, really much better. But it's nice, at least with the restaurants around town, you know, it's not something we have to deal with anymore.
Right. And are there any smoke-free gambling environments?
Although I think it should, I think there's parts of the, you could say parts of the casino would be, and certainly the hotel rooms, you know, have ones that are non-smoking. But I mean, in terms of the actual gaming parts, I think it's pretty much, still anything goes there as far as that goes, so.
Right. Which, you know, is really unfortunate. I think they just assume that most of the people who want to gamble are people that don't eat well and want to drink a lot and gamble. And, you know, there are a handful of us that just enjoy gambling and want to take care of every other part of ourselves. But oh well.
Exactly. Yeah.
But there's more to Las Vegas.
Things have changed even in the last few years here, and that's what's really made, you could see some of the, you know, the things that we're hearing just about the numbers, just the numbers of people that have moved towards plant-based eating and the vegan lifestyle have doubled in, you know, the last few years. And you can really see that just by the number of people that are coming to town that are requesting these things. And I hear this from restaurateurs and general managers and chefs and things like that, that, you know, we just have more people asking than have ever been before. They're asking, what do you have? You know, that's plant-based, what can you do that's vegetarian, vegan for me? It's a good thing nowadays they don't have to ask as much because it's right there on the menu for them. But we've just seen such a growth even in the last few years. I don't think I would have been able to 5 years ago even go and do some of the things that I've been able to do. Now I can't keep up with it because literally we have new restaurants here opening every week, and almost all of them are offering some sort of, you know, plant-based option. So now I still got to get around and try to sample and, you know, be able to blog about it, but it's just it's the trend that is happening. It's very, very encouraging.
Las Vegas is known for its gambling, of course, and its entertainment.
Right.
Do you think it's going to morph into something different?
I think that's going to be the bedrock of it. I think that's one of the reasons why it's such a great, you know, getaway city. And nowadays, especially now that we come into the warmer weather, the whole idea of the day clubs, which almost all the resorts now have day clubs that are going on where the pools are turned into, in a sense, a nightclub during the day, as well as the nightclubs at night. I think that's always going to be a big part of what is here. I think for many, many years, Las Vegas has been known as a really good restaurant city, but it's especially, you know, the coming of the late 1990s, early 2000s, we had so many of the top chefs came and started opening up restaurants here, and so they kind of developed a little bit more of a reputation, and now we have, you know, the Joel Robuchons and different ones like that that actually, you know, instead of opening up in New York City or maybe one of the other cities that people thought they would have normally have opened in, they opened in Las Vegas instead. So I think that's pretty encouraging in that sense. And so people are looking at Las Vegas just because of the fact that most of our dining is concentrated in a very small area has really become a very well-regarded, if not, you know, great food city now. And as far as vegans go, I don't know that we're ever going to be able to compare to a Portland or a New York City or San Francisco, you know, as far as the sheer number of vegan restaurants, but I think where Las Vegas is a leader now is in terms of the number of traditional restaurants who have opened up their menus to plant-based food options. And I think that's actually a great way to be able to get into the mainstream, because now you have people that can come with a group of people, and every, you know, there's something for everybody there. People are going to be more apt to try, I think, when it's on a regular menu, as opposed to making their way into a, you know, a 100% vegan restaurant.
Absolutely.
Although they're great, and they serve a purpose, obviously. A person who's not in that lifestyle is usually not going to find their way into one of those restaurants.
Right.
It's a little bit harder, unless they're blocked by somebody.
It is so important that more restaurants serve vegan options just for that reason.
Right.
And because, you know, we all like to socialize. Not all of my friends, most of my friends aren't vegan. And, you know, we like to go out together. And it's so uncomfortable when you're sitting with people and they're all looking at the menu going, now, what are you going to eat?
Right.
Yeah.
We have some great restaurants now that have full vegan menus to go along with the other ones, even more extensive than Norwest at the Wynn and the Encore. And so the choices are endless, and they're adding more things all of the time. And so really it's possible to go out and find anything from fast food to casual dining to fine dining and have, you know, great vegan options available for you. And the amount of visitors that are coming now, you know, one of the bridges that we want to be able to build, because if we just figured if just 1 to 5% of the people coming in every month are looking for plant-based meals, that's between 30 and 150,000 people a month coming in. And so we want to obviously help build a bridge to them.
Yeah, that's some serious business.
Yeah.
Now, you have a blog. I mentioned it before when you weren't with us briefly, eatingveganinlasvegas.tumblr.com.
Right.
You're one of those Tumblr blog sites. And I was just wondering, you know, what your feeling is at Tumblr, especially now with Yahoo picking it up for $1.1 billion.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's inevitable. It seems like, you know, that somebody creates a model that is picking up a different demographic. And one of the things that a lot of the younger people especially were shifting away from Facebook because they felt that it had become already a little too corporate and too many of their parents and everybody else were getting on it. One of the reasons why I chose Tumblr as opposed to WordPress and things like that, and we'll just see how things go because I could switch over at any time, I suppose, but it was really more of a deliberate sort of thing because, for one thing, the Tumblr blogs, and not having done a blog before, was very user-friendly for me to be able to do the kind of things I was doing with pictures and the kind of blog that I would envision doing. So it was good that way. But it was also because of the demographic. I wanted to reach a younger demographic because I believe that this younger generation is very key in terms of, you know, what's going to happen not only in this generation but in generations to come. And the Tumblr platform was really one that allowed me to be able to do that. And I've really picked up a lot of that demographic as a result of it, just being on Tumblr.
Right. Interesting. Well, that shows you how out of it I am, because I didn't realize all of this until pretty recently. So I might need to start tumbling.
Right. And, well, you know, the great thing about it is, too, is that it really, my main means of communicating with people anyway through social media is Facebook and Twitter. But everything that I do on Facebook, my Facebook page, the Eating Vegan in Vegas, everything, the blog goes right into my Facebook. The Facebook goes into Twitter, and they're all kind of connected. So they all kind of work hand in hand. So there's a lot of different ways that you can get out there because everybody has. There's people that are very loyal to Twitter. There are people that are very loyal to Facebook. There are people that are very loyal to, you know, to Tumblr. So I'm reaching really all of the areas just in one swoop, you know. So it's good. I realize with social media you've got to cross-pollinate, so to speak, as much as you possibly can.
So you were eating out every day for 1 year.
Yes, every day, and sometimes multiple times during the day because, for example, if I was going to go to California for 2 days, I needed to double and triple up sometimes because I'd write some blogs ahead of time. So there are some days that were pretty crazy. Talking about being under the pressure, the last thing I wanted to go was out and eat another meal, and I did, and those were the exceptions. But, yeah, but it was a challenge, and, it, you know, and it got to be where I had a list of restaurants that I know I wanted to go to. And then some of them, it just became a spontaneous thing. I happened to be over in a certain part of town, and I knew some possibilities there, and so I just kind of happened upon some meals that way. But there are a few restaurants that in the book that I went to a number of times. I tried different things every time, and it was hard because I wanted to go back and have the same thing that I tried before, but I couldn't do it because I had to blog about something different. But it was a good problem to have, I suppose. But,
well, I'm always telling people to find their kitchens because I think there are many, many people that eat out every day, and they're not blogging about it. That's just the American way.
It is, and I think that if you think about it, most people though are going to eat two-thirds of their meals at home, I would think, most people anyway. If you do, lunchtime seems to be that thing when they're out on a lunch hour, they might catch something somewhere, or breakfast if it's they're meeting somebody or things like that, and an occasional dinner out. But for the most part, and that's what I tell people, is that this is really one in terms of really adapting to this lifestyle is at home, because that's where you can really, really make a difference there, because then there's so many wonderful recipes now that are available, and it's one of the things I do on my Facebook site, especially posting 3, 4, 5 recipes a day, because there are just so many wonderful recipes are out there, and those are the kind of practical things that people need to transition and then just continue to thrive in the lifestyle. And, you know, there was over 2,000 vegan cookbooks published last year alone.
Yeah, that's the year of the vegan cookbook. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, really. And it just, and so many more on the way. And the demand seems to really be endless for them because, I did incorporate, even in during my 365-day adventure, after a while, people kept saying, but do you have any recipes? So I did incorporate where some of the days I actually cooked a meal at home and then blogged about that as well, and incorporated that because I think that was a very important component to it, because it really is key. And like you said, it really does. It really starts and ends at home. And there are so many wonderful products now. I mean, as I tell people now, we've never been in a place before where there have been so many quality alternative plant-based products than there are right now. And I mean, I'm talking quality products, from cheeses to yogurts to ice creams to, you know, to meat alternatives and things like that. We've never, ever had the kind of selection we do right now. And a lot of it is just supply and demand, because the more demand there is for it, people are going to be out there, you know, creating new products, you know,
right,
to, you know, try to meet that demand.
It definitely makes things easier. My wish for the world, of course, is that all cookbooks would be vegan one day and that there wouldn't be a need for any other kind of cookbook. Maybe not in my lifetime, but who knows? With over 2,000 last year, we're only going to grow, and the point is the options are literally endless. This is not a boring diet. This is a lovely, lovely, delicious thing, and like I always love to say, you don't know how good you can feel until you do it. Well, Paul, I hope to meet you sometime out in Las Vegas or somewhere out there.
I look forward to it.
And I wish you all the best with eating vegan in Vegas.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Jane,
for joining me, and thanks for coming back.
Yes, thank you.
Okay,
thanks for allowing me to come back.
Of course. Okay, be well.
Thank you.
Right, well, that was fun. And I mentioned that there were a bunch of other things that I wanted to talk about. So we just have a few minutes left, and I'm going to get on with those things because I think they're important. So we talked about the bees, and the last thing I wanted to mention about bees is, in addition to growing your own hives and gardening and propagating healthy bee colonies, there are food products that you can avoid which will not support the pesticides, of course, and not support the foods that use a lot of these bad pesticides that are killing the bees. So, of course, buying organic is so important. I wanted to tell you what you can avoid. And so there are genetically modified crops like corn, canola, sugar beets that these neonicotinoids are primarily used for. So foods that use corn, canola, and sugar beets, these are mostly the boxed foods, the processed foods. Let's not buy them. Let's buy organic food and mostly whole foods, minimally processed, and not support those foods that are using these horribly toxic pesticides. So there's another reason to lighten up on all of those processed foods, right? One more thing I wanted to talk about in the last few minutes is another thing that's been in the news a lot, and I don't want to mention any names, but there's one celebrity, you've probably heard of her, who has come out about her double mastectomy and going to proceed with some other surgery to remove her ovaries because she has been diagnosed with the BRCA genes, BRCA1 and 2, and has been diagnosed as having a very high risk of coming down with breast cancer and ovarian cancer. And I really don't like when we hear about these things in the news. I think it's fascinating that we're identifying genes and identifying DNA and figuring out what things are connected to different diseases. I know we're going to learn a lot from that. But what I don't enjoy is the fear that is all around it. And the people that are considered, quote, high risk are driven to do things that really, I believe in my opinion, are really unnecessary. So the first thing I think, if you think you're part of a group that has a high risk for certain diseases like breast cancer or other cancers or heart disease or diabetes, is number one, get rid of the fear. And people often say to me, how do you do that? How do you get rid of the fear? Well, meditation is what worked for me. As you probably know, I went through ovarian cancer, advanced ovarian cancer, with a very low survival rate. The statistics were way against me. And the first thing that I did to work on the fear portion was meditation. And that I created my own program. If anybody wants to know about the program I created, you can email me and I will share it with you, info@realmeals.org. But you can create your own program, and the point is to talk to yourself, talk to your 53 trillion or more cells in your body, and really work against the fear. There are definitely ways to do that. And you start thinking positively about your life. The other thing is, I love statistics. I love numbers. I love data. But so many of our studies today, the statistics don't really tell us the truth, and you have to always know that you are not a statistic. You are not a number. You are in control. And if you've been told that you have a high risk for something, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, there are things that you can do, things that you can control, and things that you can do to make a difference. And that's where it's all about food, because food can really make a difference in two ways. One is not consuming the foods that are going to feed disease, that are going to feed your disease, but also consuming the right foods that are going to boost your immune system and keep your cells healthy. And we don't hear enough about this. All we hear about is if you're in high risk for a certain disease, you need to have all different parts of your body chopped off. And this is a bad message, and it really makes me angry. So I just wanted to put that out there. You are in control. Now, we're all going to die, but the idea is that we want to live a long, quality life feeling good. And you don't know how good you can feel until you're really nourishing your body with healthy plant foods, especially those wonderful green foods. And the last thing I want to say before I go is that green is good. And some people are really putting out some bad information about oxalates these days. Oxalates are not a problem unless you're eating a lot of meat. But if you're on a plant-based diet, greens are good. And that's all I want to say. There's nothing that kale can't do. Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. You can find some wonderful, great vegan recipes at my nonprofit website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. And remember to have a very delicious week. Bye.